Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Providence Journal's College Basketball Podcast. This is Bill Koch, sports writer for the Journal, from my Warwick home on a Wednesday night. We are getting this in ahead of the holiday season for my co-conspirator and I. Christmas is coming. We will both be celebrating in various forms over the weekend and into early next week. We want to wish you, all the listeners, folks who celebrated Hanukkah recently, hope it was a blessed and peaceful season. For the folks who will celebrate Christmas in the future, we hope Santa is generous. I'm joined, as always, by the sports director at ABC6, the weekend co-host of Cordici and Coit on WEI Providence, Nick Coit, ladies and gentlemen. Coity, happy holidays, my friend.
Happy holidays, William. It is always a great time of the year, obviously, because we get to kind of kick it back at some point with family and friends and, you know, really enjoy what's important to all of us. And then we get to enjoy some college basketball, in particular, some Big East basketball, because it's back and it is tremendous.
It is here and it is spicy right off the top. Last night, Tuesday, we were both at Amica Mutual Pavilion, and that's where we will start with the Providence men, Coity. 72-57 against Marquette. The defending regular season and conference tournament champions in the Big East go down against the Friars. Providence's fourth double-digit win against the top 10 opponents since 1997. Nights like those don't happen very often. You should enjoy them while they do. You should also take stock of what Providence did and how they did it in this game against the Golden Eagles, the preseason league favorites. Coit, my question to you, does this cause you to recalibrate any expectations for Providence going forward?
Recalibrate? No, because I felt that they were a tournament team. And so I think I'm still there. But I hadn't really – I don't think we had seen Providence near its best on both ends on a given night. Mm. I think maybe the Wisconsin win was a good one because of just how good they were. But it also spoke to just how bad Wisconsin was at that point. So it was kind of like, I don't know. You know, this one was really impressive. You're talking about a team that was battle-tested in non-conference in Marquette. And they came in here and they were stifled. They were out-physical. You know, Shaka Smart really said as much. Like, they, Big East basketball, there's going to be physical activity. And the Friars, they dictated that. And that was impressive. Obviously, the defense, we know how good it is for Providence. I think this was a real test of it. And I think they passed really, really well. I mean, Devin Carter was special. I think you saw the length of guys like Ticket Gaines and guys. Garway Duwal, I think, is a guy that a lot of people are talking about after this one, particularly because, you know, and put up points, but that didn't matter because he was so impactful in other ways. So, you know, we'll go through this here, but recalibrate? No, I was just really impressed just to see it. And I mean, the stat to me that speaks to just how much the defense can really help this Friars team. If the Friars score now 71 points or more in a game this season, they're 10-0. So you get to that number and you play defense the way they should play defense, the way they can play defense, it's going to be hard to beat Providence on a given night, particularly at a place where not many teams can come in here and win. So really, really impressed.
Good stat, Coit. Also, if they make more than five threes in a game, they're 10-0.
Bingo.
Two games that they lost, Kansas State and Oklahoma, they were 5-for-22 and 5-for-23. In those games.
Yeah.
Perimeter shots did not fall. You look at last night, the other instances of them winning by double digits against a top 10 opponent. I cite 1997 because they were in the Elite Eight that year, and they had a double digit victory against Duke on the way to the Elite Eight in that NCAA tournament. Since then, some rather noteworthy instances. 2004, a double-digit win at UConn that inspired the famous Jim Calhoun-Ryan Gomes rant, which was an all-time classic.
Do you want me to imitate that, or should I keep that up?
Go right ahead.
No.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I won't do that.
I took Emeka Okafor instead of Ryan Gomes. I get it. You know, last time I checked, he's pretty good. That's the abridged version. It lives on YouTube, I'm sure. For anyone who wants to look that one up, it was tremendous. 2011 against Villanova, which was kind of an oddball because Keno Davis was within the last 12 to 15 games of his tenure at Providence, but they whacked the Wildcats at home by 15 in a game. And then in January against UConn, when UConn was sort of in that little bit of a tailspin there in the Big East, they performed very well in a non-conference, and Providence sort of got them while they were struggling at home, beat them by 12. But I don't remember that game being as impactful, as forceful, you know, as complete as this one. And you mentioned it, the way that they stifled Marquette defensively. This is the number eight defense in the country now, according to KenPom. Marquette came in shooting over 60% from two. They didn't get to 39% in this game. They're 4 for 20 from three. You know, this is an offense. It's pretty free-flowing, freewheeling under Shaka Smart. Yeah, they've been one of the best the last two or three years nationally, according to efficiency. And, you know, Providence, you use the right word, Coit, stifled, smothered, strangled them at that end of the floor. Can they do this to everyone else going forward? Because this is the sort of game style, the sort of discipline that will travel and that goes deep into March as well.
That's the thing right there. Goes deep into March. This wins you big time games. And it goes places. You'll find the offense. You have guys that can score. Devin Carter will score in transition. Ticket Gaines will get hot from three. Bryce Hopkins will get you tough twos. Josh Duro is smooth when it comes to, you know, playing down low. And I was impressed with him too. You know, it's, you're going up against Iguodaro, and I think Duro won handily in that matchup. And I think Iguodaro was, you know, he was probably stifled in other ways too. I mean, I just think everything was sort of out of whack with Marquette's offense, and he was probably, you know, that was an after effect of it. But Providence just got a lot of weapons. They'll find the offense, and I don't think Kim is worried about that. I think the defense, the way that they are bought in. And again, the athleticism, the length, I think that was really on display. We know how good Devin is. We've seen it. He embraced the challenge of going up. I love the soundbite post game. I aired it on the 6 o'clock news tonight about how the coaching staff wanted to put Devin somewhere else defensively and have Jaden guard Tyler Kolick, and Devin Carter's like, nope, I'm guarding him. Nope. I'm going to cut the head off the snake. And he basically did. And then when they switched him to Cam Jones, early second half, there goes Tyler on a personal 7-0 run. Like, oh, okay. That probably didn't work. So we know how good Devin is, and he leads the way there. But the length that we saw from some of the other guys, I mentioned Garway again. I think he showed those signs of, ooh, okay, this kid belongs on the floor. He belongs, and he doesn't need to be the scorer. He doesn't need to, you know, put the ball in the hoop. He can do a lot more than just do that. And you saw it on display.
Yeah. Devin Carter, a different level offensively this year. It's the 3-point shooting that has improved so much for him. He's 5 for 9 in that game. He has 22 points on 10 shots. You know, that's a good kind of efficiency for him. Defensively, he winds up on Tyler Kolick in the first half. Kolick doesn't score in the last 13:38 of the first half. They switch him over to Cam Jones in the second half. Cam Jones doesn't score in the second half. Zero. All 13 of his points in the first half. So Carter effective on both guys. Ticket Gaines made shots in the game, which is very important. Aside from Wagner, he'd really struggled from three. Was only 7 for 37 in his other 10 games. Last night, he's 5 for 10. And a big contributor at that end of the floor. That replaces the scoring you didn't get from Bryce Hopkins, which, you know, whenever you have production in that way, that's a very nice thing to get. You mentioned Garway Duwall, Coit. This is a guy who affects winning without scoring, which is really critically important on a team that honestly, Carter and Aduro and Gaines and Hopkins, they can take the shots. That's fine. They can score the ball. Duall's had 7 assists in each of his last 2 games. Only 2 turnovers combined. Last night against Marquette, he's a plus 25 in 23 minutes. That tells you about his application on the defensive end of the floor. He's only scored 1 point in those 2 games. Doesn't matter. He's affecting winning with his activity, with his length, with his willingness to defend. And if you're a freshman, high school senior looking to get recruited, freshman in a college program who's looking to get on the floor, the last 2 game sample of Garway Duall, just watch the tape, because he's giving you exhibit A of how to get on the floor early if you're a young player.
Another guy that we haven't even mentioned yet that I think has stood out and you know, obviously really stood out in the Sacred Heart game for his shooting. But even last night when he came in, you know, can instantly knock down shots for you, can really be a, you know, a momentum changer with his shot, is Rich Barron. I think the kid really belongs when he comes in off the bench. He can be lethal with that thing. That 3-point shot is buttery, man, and it's smooth. He can knock it down. He comes in with confidence. I think if you're a Providence fan, you're looking at saying like, okay, you know, how's Kim and his staff, how are they doing with the recruiting of some of their young players? Well, you kept Duall and you bring in Rich Barron and you identify him as a kid that can help you win Big East games. You know, this is a kid that, again, I think he can help you off the bench too. So, you know, there's check marks right there for, you know, your taste, you know, and what you're bringing in, guys that can help you and, you know, be part of your culture. So, yeah, just mentioning Rich Barron too, because obviously the Sacred Heart game was a breakout, but even last night too, I like what he brings when he comes in the game.
We got to mention Tyler Kolek, obviously, because he's playing in that game, homecoming for him. The Cumberland native, the Big East Player of the Year, has 21 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. For long stretches was playing alone in that game, really. You know, had 8 quick ones. Carter took him away the rest of the first half. Had a personal 7-0 run to start the second half. It gets down to 40-36. And, you know, you could tell the amp was getting a little edgy at that point. You're thinking, all right, Marquette's going to swing back. Here it is. What will Providence do from here? Will they stabilize? Will they answer? Ultimately, they did. You know, aside from Kolek and Cam Jones, only 6 field goals for the rest of Marquette. Their teammates shot 22% in the game. You know, not enough contribution from everybody else. Certainly not the team that we saw beat Kansas and take Purdue to the wire out in Maui. And a lot of that was what Providence did to them. And if you look at KenPom at this point, like I said, Providence is 8th in defense. They're 6th in effective field goal percentage. They're 7th against the 2. You get assists on 38% of your buckets against them. That's 8th nationally. So you're talking about elite in multiple categories and not just in one area of the floor. They guard the paint well. They run you off the 3-point line. They stunt your connectivity on the perimeter. You know, and I asked Kim English and Josh Duro a little bit about that at the last availability, and the short answer is basically, we're not going to let you shoot threes if you're a guard or a forward. We're going to run you off the line. And then if you want to drive, we're going to force you to areas where we know we have help on the wings and into the corners. We're going to take away what are normally the comfortable areas of offense. If you can run some 2-man game down the middle of the floor, some pick and roll, some pick and pop action, and you have a 5-man who can make some shots, you might be able to hurt us a little bit. But otherwise, we're going to take away traditional areas that are comfortable for you and make them crowded, make them uncomfortable for you. And I think for the most part, through 12 games, we've seen that in action, and that philosophy has worked a treat so far.
Yeah, when you do that, it just kind of takes you out of rhythm, and it makes it difficult for you to get on the board, and it makes it difficult for teams to really put together runs too, because you just, yeah, and you're able to do it if you're Providence because you have such a great collective team effort and buy-in defensively. So I think it was on full display against Marquette. They never really seemed in rhythm, never really seemed comfortable. They scrapped some offense together at points, but it never really seemed like, even when they threw that punch, when Tyler's throwing that punch, I think I was looking back at the highlights, that second basket, he had to follow his own rebound. There's three guys standing there waiting for him. I mean, he had to roll the thing, throw it and roll it over the rim. It was tough. It was tough. But it spoke to the fact Tyler was trying to get in there and get physical and trying to earn those baskets. And, you know, I don't know if Marquette's was sort of doing that collectively. I don't think some of the guys behind him were doing that. You know, it seemed like the physicality bothered Marquette. I think Shaka Smart said as much. And I think Providence was able to, you know, sort of dig in and take that physical challenge on, which you're going to see in Big East basketball. And, you know, I think that's why they won the way they won.
Providence with a tangible effect from that win. They're plus 17 in the net. They're all the way up to 54. They were plus 13 in KenPom. They went from 52 to 39. You know, so if you're looking at what happens when you effectively pitch a shutout against an elite opponent, you know, and metrically it favors you so much, you make a huge leap in that way. And Providence has a chance to continue that momentum. They've got two Big East home games coming up. Butler on Saturday, for my money, the surprise of the league, pleasant surprise to this point. The Bulldogs have been really good in the non-conference and, you know, took out Georgetown in their opener on Tuesday. Then they've got a little bit of a break before they play Seton Hall on January 3rd. Seton Hall, as we record this, just wrapped up a 15-point win at home against UConn, the defending national champion.
Oh, so, baby.
The Pirates, who hadn't really done much in the non-conference, they win against Missouri in a game in Kansas City on a neutral floor, and now they beat UConn at home. You know, so maybe Shaheen Holloway getting it going a little bit there for Seton Hall. That's going to be on January 3rd. The students will still be away. Quite, we should mention, there was still a good crowd at Amica Mutual Pavilion, even without the students. Kim English compared it to an NBA playoff crowd, adults who are fired up with beer.
With beer.
And loud and ready to go. You know, compared it to that. And, you know, I think the numbers bear it out, Coity. You know, it was so shocking when they lost their last two home games last year. Xavier, they didn't really defend, and Seton Hall, they just completely laid an egg on senior day. But prior to that, Providence had been running their own version of a fortress downtown. This is a golden opportunity for them to start off 3-0 and give themselves a little bit of a cushion atop the Big East.
Yeah, huge, huge. It is amazing how much this arena is a home advantage. It's 40-3 the last three seasons. Mm. That is really, really impressive. And if you walk into the building, if you go to these games, if you're there in that environment, I mean, this team gets so much support. It can really change, you know, the way the game's going. You know, I mean, think about what they were doing with Tyler Kolick, going to the free throw line and the whole place is booing him. Which, you know, Tyler's a tough kid, and I know he was embracing it. Tyler, it was fun to watch Tyler play because he was doing some talking. He was doing some talking.
Lots of
it.
Awesome. Lots of
He's
it.
Confident, man. He's confident. Always has been.
Yeah.
You know, but just to see that, like, and you know, you get a couple of three-pointers in a row and the place starts going nuts, and these players are feeding off the emotion, and even the coaches. I thought I caught Kim sort of feeding off the emotion last night, too, of the place. I asked him about a post-game. He kind of was like, no, I was talking to Josh Aduro about, you know, here's how we take a charge, all that. Like, oh, all right. I look back at it. He was saying something to him about it, but I was like, I think Kim was pretty fired up at points. You know, for a pretty even-keeled guy so far, I think he was into it. I think coaching staff was – I think everybody gets into it. And that's – the Friars have such a, you know, intimate support, you know, and this place is just – they pack it. It's amazing. It really is. So to have the home court advantage that they have, It can only help when these Big East teams come in and, you know, something goes wrong for a team and all of a sudden momentum swings just like that. And that's what we've seen here the last three seasons.
This was always the question. Would they just continue? Would they just pick up where they left off? Once Ed Cooley left, you're wondering, you're thinking he is so identified with that job. He's such a perfect fit with that job. He had had such a long period of sustained success, you know, longer than any coach since Gavitt or Mullaney. You know, when you consider his tenure and the length of it, you know, Providence has been a winning program at times, but it has been a stepping stone type job. You know, folks like Rick Pitino and Rick Barnes and Pete Gillen have all found what they felt to be greener pastures elsewhere. You know, and so you wondered, you know, once Ed Cooley leaves, this was supposed to be the guy who's going to stay forever. Is this going to be some sort of crippling body blow? You know, the liver punch in a boxing match, where we just crumple to the floor. And I think the answer Tuesday night was very clearly and emphatically no.
Nope.
These guys are still here. They are still capable of performing at a very high level. You know, we didn't necessarily see that at Oklahoma, but their second chance against an elite opponent, they got it absolutely spot on right. You know, and you give them big credit in that way, the coaching staff, the players, the administration, the fans, for showing out, creating that environment. That's a program type win. That's not just a coach or player or team type win. That is an institutional program type win that you saw in that game. It was very impressive.
Big time.
You know, and for me, I asked you that question off the top. Does it cause you to recalculate your expectations? For me, in terms of Providence, I always thought they were going to be a tournament team this year. I felt like the players were too good not to be. Now I'm curious whether or not they might be able to penetrate in some way what seems like this top three of Marquette, UConn, Creighton in the Big East. Those three have outperformed everybody in terms of the net, in terms of KenPom leading into the season. If Providence is able to protect home court like they did last night, even against the big boys, all you have to do is steal three or four on the road. I know it's all you have to do. That's the most difficult thing to do in college basketball, is to win away from home. But if for some reason you could go 4-6, 5-5 away, you're 9-1 at home. You don't, you know, you only lose one game. And it's a game that you don't chunk away, but maybe you just get beat by Creighton or by UConn or somebody on a given night. They just play well and you lose. That gets you to 13, 14, 15 wins in the league.
Yeah.
You get to that point, all of a sudden, you are a top two or three team. That's just what the math says over the years.
Isn't it interesting that the home game against UConn is the last Big East game on the schedule?
Fascinating now. I thought it was all the way, but now we're thinking,
Yeah.
Are we overreacting to one game? Sure, that's what we do. It's fun. But it's I think when you do something like that, when you play 40 minutes like that against that opponent, it's why I opened it up the way I did off the top. You don't beat top 10 teams like that very often.
Yeah.
And in other seasons, Providence has done it. 97, 2004, last season. You did some things further on down the line. It was a marker of things to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe the recalibration, you know, could happen. You know, a few more games here, see where they go. But for me, I thought they were a tournament team. I thought they could be a team like this. But just to see it and see it against a high ranking opponent, was really impressive, really impressive. And if it continues down this road, you know, we'll see. But like you said, I mean, defense travels. They've got the tools to do it. So, yeah, I'm excited. This was like, okay, first big one, Big East, home, Marquette. What are they going to do? And they were really, really good. They were really good. And it was fun. It makes you think like, okay, buckle up. This is going to be a ride.
Well said, Coity. Saturday at noon at the Meeker Mutual Pavilion, Providence will host Butler. That is not the most important thing happening that day. As we know, Coit, you want to fill in the listeners on what's going on Saturday otherwise?
Oh, I just have my annual Christmas party. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The Koik Hondo Holiday Party, the fifth edition, will be outstanding. I will be in attendance. I cannot wait. Rumor has it, we're going to have multiple representatives from the Koik family in the house.
Multiple, yes. Oh, correct.
I mean, talk about some Christmas cheer. My goodness. I can't wait. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't.
Me too.
I can't wait.
Still going to clean.
It's going to be tremendous. Tremendous. Quite well, flashback to last Saturday, a week before the Koik Hondo Holiday Party, fifth edition. Two of our men's teams were in action on Long Island. I was a little under the weather on Saturday morning. I planned to attend. I did not ultimately make the drive. I decided that 6 hours in the car probably wouldn't have been the best. There might have been some pulling over at times. You know, maybe some rest stopping that wasn't necessarily on the itinerary. Wasn't feeling great. Thank goodness, only a 24-hour bug. My nephews are really cute, but I'm going to blame them. They might have given me the plague there real quick. Little kid immune systems, you know, like they're just exposed to every kind of germ, and I'm not. So it wasn't necessarily the best feeling in the world. I love those guys, though. I can't wait to see them for Christmas. We saw two of our men's teams play. One of them was a winner in historic fashion, as it turned out. Bryant, 101-93 against Towson in double overtime. Shorthanded Bulldogs, first time in their Division I history they've had six players in double figures. And that's basically because they only had six or seven rotation members available in this game. Sharif Gross-Bullock did not play. We'll find out what happened with him later in the week. That's undisclosed. But you saw some heroics from the rest of this team. Doug Eddard makes three free throws at the end of regulation to tie it at 73. Bryant grinds its way through the 10 minutes in overtime, and also ultimately they make Towson submit. Rafael Pinzon, 28 points in the game. Daniel Rivera, 16 points, 6 rebounds, 6 block shots. Doug Eddard with 20 off the bench, 11 for 13 from the line, 3 for 6 from 3. Coity, Bryant, as we said in the last version of the pod, they went out to Cincinnati. They were competitive for about 30 minutes, and then the elastic snapped. You know, and it was to the point where Cincinnati really beat them up for the last 10 minutes. And you're curious how they would respond. They lost two in a row at that point. You're going to Long Island. Towson's pretty good. CAA is a very good league, and you think Towson will play at or near the top of that league. And for Bryant, I think this is just another marker for them, just another character. Closed ranks, composed sort of program victory for them that they can really build on going forward into America East play.
Well, they've had to do a lot of that this year, huh?
And they've only made a few a choice months. Because we've talked about it from the start, yeah. From our preview pods, the schedule was going to be so hard that they were going to be tested in a certain way that maybe some other teams weren't. And it feels like they've responded more often than not.
Well, and there's a connectivity too. When a team has to respond the way they have, you know, particularly you're without your top scorer, you know, Sharif Gross-Bullock not on the floor. It's an opportunity for other guys to sort of step forward. And Pinzon is really impressive as a scorer and the way he can come in and just give you offense. You know, Rivera is, I mean, just athletically, he's so impressive. You know, we've seen that throughout the season so far. I loved in this game, you said his name, his contribution, and I think he has had a lot of ups and downs through his year and a half now at Bryant. Doug Eddard having 20 points in that game and affecting the game he did, that's huge. Because I think he's had, like I said, ups and downs. You know, I don't know what it's been, you know, maybe just the shots not falling, that sort of thing. But to see that, especially from a kid that if you ever get to talk to Doug, just a great young man, just a great guy. You know, so to see him, you know, give the contribution that he did, I think it's, you know, not only is it great to see him do that, but for Bryant, that's another guy that can affect the game and help you in your rotation. And it's just been so collective. Like you said, it's closed ranks, everything they've dealt with so far. you know, going into Omerick East play, I mean, you want to talk about the definition of battle tested. I think opponent wise, off the court wise, this team is battle tested. So I expect them to really do some things in Omerick East because of that. I think they're well prepared.
So what we hear from coaches all the time is, you know, we want our teams to be tough. We want them to, you know, have some scars, and we want them to bounce back from things and whatever else. And then they schedule 11 home games in the non-conference. And you're just like, well, wait a minute. You know, how are we supposed to toughen up here and be calloused and whatever else? You know, what are we really talking about here? In Bryant's case, you know, granted, you're playing a couple home games against Fisher and Springfield. Like, those are placeholders. I understand that. You lose by 9 at Rutgers. You win at Florida Atlantic. You win at Brown in a game that was at Donnybrook in the second half. You blow Siena out on the road. You're competitive with Stony Brook. You know, you get buried in a deluge of three-pointers in the second half, probably a game that you should have won. And maybe 2 months from now you would win if you played on a neutral court. Cincinnati, you're competitive for 30 minutes. And then Towson, you play on a neutral floor and you win. None of that is comfortable. None of that is straightforward. None of it was, you know, oh, yeah, this will be easy, and, you know, we should beat these guys, and we're 10-point favorites in Vegas or from KenPom or anything else. Like, you know, yeah, there were no shoulds there. There's Bryant performing on a given night and getting contributions from guys who helped them pull it out of the fire. You know, and I give them huge credit in that way. You start off 1-3. You get spanked at BU. You're thinking, where could this go? You know, Phil Martelli's questioning himself. Sitting in a hotel room in Boston, he's got a 6 or 7 a.m. flight to Miami, and it's just like, man, what's going to happen here? We're going to play Florida Atlantic. They're in the Final Four last year. We could really – this could really go sideways in a hurry. You know, and ever since then, they're 6-3. And the majority of those wins have been away from home. You know, they go into the non-conference finishing up here. They got Drexel at home on Friday, an 11 a.m. tip. That's a good test. Drexel beat Villanova, obviously. You're at Ole Miss on New Year's Eve. But you're at the point now where you could finish over 500 in the non-conference. I don't know what kind of odds you and I would have given each other before the season about Bryant finishing above 500 in the non-conference, but I think they would have been pretty slim, no?
Oh, yeah. I didn't think we expected that. I think we looked at the schedule and said, you know. But, I mean, you know, we know that Omerick East is what really matters here for this program trying to get to where it wants to get to. But we looked at it and said, yeah, this is stiff. It's tough. You know, what kind of record are they going to have? And you're right. If they're able to, you know, finish around or above 500, I mean, that's pretty darn good, particularly, again, where they started things out here this season. And it just speaks to the – you know, connectivity, I think, that this group has shown on the floor.
No question about it. It's been really impressive. You know, they've found roles. They've found a rotation. They've found guys who play well together. They've done it quickly and early, and that's going to serve them well over the next 2 or 3 months.
And the guy, honestly, Bill, the guy that we haven't even talked about, who I think is having a tremendous season, we talk about Sharif. And you know, the ability that he has, but
you're going to talk about the Omerick East player of the week, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, Earl Timberlake's having a heck of a year.
Yeah, he is.
He's affecting the game in many different ways. And we talked about it before, the assist numbers, the dimes, and that's been impressive. But he's, I don't know, at some points it feels quiet. Because it's just, you maybe expect it. He's consistent with it. Maybe that's why.
I think it's because he's just playing.
Yeah.
He's just playing in the flow of the game. And it just happens. And you look at his numbers after the game and you're like, oh, wow. He had 14 points and 12 rebounds and 8 assists. And it's just like, oh, no, okay. He only he only took 6 or 7 shots. And you think, well, okay. You know, was he really like Kevin McHale? But and I'm not. This is not a comparison. I want to be very clear.
All right, Tommy Anderson, where are you going with this?
But there was some you know, NBA TV or ESPN or whatever else, and Kevin McHale is marveling over Magic Johnson at one point. And he says, Magic Johnson dominates the game with 12 shots. Yeah. He goes 6 for 12. He's got 22 points and 15 assists and 10 rebounds. And you think, well, how much did he really do? You know, if there wasn't a highlight Showtime type play, you know, where it's a run out for Worthy or Kareem or Michael Cooper or whatever. And you think, how'd this guy dominate the game taking 10 to 12 shots? He just did, because he was just so comfortable in that flow, just playing along as it goes. Timberlake's that type of guy. He's not necessarily going to do something that's going to be on the highlight reel every night, but you think, oh my goodness, you know, this guy like tore the rim off the backboard with a dunk, or like, you know, he scored 50 or whatever else, but he's just such an effective, useful Swiss Army knife type player in that way.
Well, he can make those sorts of moves. We've seen it out of Earl, but he doesn't need to. And he's affecting the game so much more. And yeah, I think you can tell down there, the coaching staff is really able to lean on him this year to do that. They know he's going to give them that kind of effort every night. And that's huge, particularly for a coach like Martelli Jr., who is, you know, taking over here in his first season. For some reason, I thought you were going down the Bill Walton, Leandro Barbosa route at some point. Leandro Barbosa is like listening to Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Still one of my favorite quotes of all time.
That is some special space occupied by the Big Red Deadhead. I am not on his level.
Was it Barbosa or was it Boris Diaw?
I think it was Boris Diaw.
Boris Diaw.
Bill's watching Big Men. He's watching Big Men.
Right. That's what it was.
That would have been Spurs Boris Diaw. That would not have been Suns Boris Diaw.
If I
had a guess.
So good.
You know, because Spurs Boris Diaw was a useful player on a championship team, and Suns Boris Diaw was a bust. You know, and then ultimately they brought him in to play with. I'm not going to get into that any further. I don't want to get on Bill Walton's level. I don't want to think about that. Other men's team that played on that Long Island card with local interest, you or I, losing to Delaware 67-56. Delaware's a good team. You know, they had won at Xavier. You know, they are a team that should compete in the Colonial. You know, or the Coastal now, Coastal Athletic Association. Apologies to our friend Miles McQuiggan, who works in that office. I don't want to shun your rebranding in that way. You're right, Coastal Athletic Association. But you or I, you know, they've lost four in a row at this point. And, you know, you look at what's happened here, and I think what's in common in a lot of these games is the opponent has produced a run at a certain point, and URI has not been able to respond to said run. In this one, it was Delaware toward the end of the first half. And sort of shutting URI out over an extended period. URI's got a 24-20 lead, you know, and all of a sudden they're down a comfortable amount at halftime and never really can come back in the second half. You know, and they had similar stretches against Providence in the second half, about 30 minutes into the game, where the Friars pulled away. They had an instance of that late in the game against Brown, where Brown really made a big push. You know, and URI couldn't stop it. Charleston did the same thing. You know, and I just think, you know, URI shorthanded in this game. Joseph Appelau is managing his knee, did not make the trip. David Fuchs is in the concussion protocol, did not play. David Green, they sat out due to eligibility concerns. We'll get into that a little bit more in the next few minutes. But, you know, Cody, I just think it's a team that doesn't play with a ton of confidence at the moment. And I think that's the thing that jumps out to me. Teams that give up runs like that and are sort of, you know, susceptible to those 5 or 6 or 7 minute periods that decide the game, where you can't respond, where you can't get an answer, you can't stop it immediately while it's happening. I think you or I sort of looks at each other and they think, well, maybe you'll do it. No, maybe you'll do it. And this is sort of the reality of a team that's a little younger and a team that's also been brought together that has so many new pieces. There's not necessarily that identifiable alpha who you'd look and say, this guy's going to bail us out of trouble when we really need it.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. Like looking around and saying, okay, who's going to make the play? And I think these other teams that they're facing have that kind of alpha. I mean, Jair Davis is really impressive. He's really good. It's clearly Providence saw something in him. But really, I think he's obviously been a monster in that CAA. He's going to continue to be. But when a guy like that takes over and takes over the floor, who does Rhodey have that can respond, that can punch back? And I don't think they necessarily know right now. And there's just sort of a – and Archie Miller has said as much. Like, this is one of the biggest battles that they've had with the group that they're coaching right now, is getting these guys to not get deflated when something happens. When another team throws a haymaker, you got to just settle down. And you thought maybe that Yale second half was one of those times where you're like, oh, they can really build off of this. Like, they got punched in the mouth in the first half, and the second half they came out and played the way they played. You know, you thought that was sort of an instance where, okay, maybe, you know, maybe this is coming together. Maybe they'll do it that more consistently. Haven't really shown that, I think, recently. Part of it may be because of the injuries, guys going out. But I think body language and not to steal a word from another program, but like mindset is that sort of thing that you need when those things happen in a game. You got to be able to sort of collect yourself, and you got to be able to say, okay, well, team just went on a run. Let's go on a run back instead of just sort of getting down. And I sort of felt that way watching the Brown game a little bit. I think, you know, Brown sort of throwing punches, and, you know, it took URI a lot to just kind of get back in it, end of the game, looking to try to make the play. All right, who's going to make it? You know, it just dealing with adversity within the game, I think, is URI's biggest challenge right now. And it does speak to a group that is still new to each other.
You make some great points there, Coit. And I definitely think that you felt like they might have identified some guys who were going to be that person for them. In this game, you know, Zeke Montgomery's 4 points, 2 for 9. Jaden House, 2 points, 1 for 6. You know, those are guys who have started every game so far, who played a lot of college basketball, who have been accomplished at a certain level before they transferred here from Bradley and from High Point. Louis Courtright did a decent job in this game. He had 10 points. He had 6 rebounds, only 2 turnovers in 30 minutes. That's acceptable. You could live with that on any given night. That's a perfectly fine piece of your starting five. But Louis Courtright's not going to be the guy who's going to go out and get you 25 or 30 or 35 or whatever it is. Like, I think he's a good 2 or 3 or 4, you know, a guy who's going to be a solid piece to a winner. He was that at Quinnipiac last year, 20-win team. But I don't necessarily think that he's the type of guy who could elevate to like a first or second team all A-10 who's going to come out and be a star in that way. You saw Montgomery have that sort of upside at Mohegan Sun. You saw House have that sort of upside early. Maybe there is a guy here who will get more time as we go forward, and that's Cam Esteves, the A-10 Rookie of the Week. Had 17 points in this game, 30 in his last two. He's had some typical ups and downs of a freshman. He's had a double-digit game followed by a zero, or a zero that precedes a double-digit game. How much can you rely on him realistically night after night? But I think he's someone who we're going to see carve out more minutes, more of a role going forward, maybe at the expense of some other people who they thought coming into the year, maybe on November 6th, who were going to play the majority of the minutes.
Yeah, and I don't think anything's set. I don't think anything's set in stone. I think this coaching staff is going to be willing to, you know, change things up, switch things up. If they see something like that, if they see somebody like him step forward. I wouldn't be surprised. I think as a freshman, you know, maybe it's just, you know, the physicality thing, the physical nature of things, you know, because I think Cam is continuing to grow. You know, he's a young guy. But you're right. He's shown instances and flashes of a lot of upside, and a guy that can really help you win games here going forward. And then obviously, I mean, the other name that we'll bring up here of a guy that I'm fascinated to see what the coaching staff does, what they've decided on, what their plan is. The other guy that maybe could step forward and be your alpha is a guy that hasn't played a game yet and now is going to be able to put on a uniform, and David Green, which we saw the blue-white scrimmage, saw the potential, obviously going through the whole waiver process, gets denied. They get the sort of flirtation with the two-week temporary restraining order, and now they get the ruling that guys that are two-time transfers that, you know, were denied or weren't going to be able to play, they can play through the spring. And so David Green is eligible if they want him, and I'm fascinated to see what they do.
They play Thursday night against New Hampshire at 6 o'clock. We're going to find out then, all of us together. You know, I'm going to be down there for the women's game at 11 a.m. against Lemoyne, and maybe there'll be some information, whether through the athletic department or through the coaching staff there. You know, curious if you would use a full year of David Green. At this point, I think you would. You're ahead of conference play if he's healthy. You know, they've mentioned he's recovering from, you know, off-season knee issues. You know, he was limited to 6 games at Louisiana Tech last year. You don't necessarily know where he is with that. They had scaled back his practice time a little bit after his waiver had been denied. They thought that was going to be it. He wasn't going to be able to play. You know, they were giving his reps to some other guys in practice. They sort of left him to, you know, work out on the periphery and work out on his own a little bit. You know, so you're curious how quickly, if possible, they can get him up to speed. You know, you got New Hampshire, you got Northeastern, and then, you know, you're on the precipice of Atlantic 10 play. And, you know, this is a guy, obviously, who can help them. You know, there's no question he can help them. You know, we saw that in the blue-white game. And certainly, you know, for anybody who's seen practice or talked to the coaching staff, you know, they feel like he's been one of their better players in practice. So what's you or I going to do there going forward? We're going to find out a lot more about that over the next, you know, couple days, couple weeks. You know, but he could change your outlook. He could be the jolt that they need to get out of this little bit of a tailspin here that they're in.
I agree. Yeah. And where does it take you when you get to conference play, a guy like that? You know, can he change your outlook there? Can he change your upside? And, you know, if he does sort of carve out his own role right away, does that sort of push everybody into a different spot, you know, or, you know, a place where they have an identifiable role? Because I don't know if that's necessarily been decided on, you know, with this team. Because again, they're still a group, as a group, young, coming together. So, you know, if David Green steps forward and says, well, no, I'm going to be the alpha on the floor, you know, does that even make a guy like a Zeke Montgomery or a Louis Courtright better? Because then they're like, okay, well, he's going to step forward, do that. I'm going to do my thing. Louis's going to, you know, do what he does near the basket, drive to the hoop, all those things, you know, because Louis is one of those guys that you can tell he's not afraid to sort of say, all right, well, I got to get to the basket here. And so I'm just going to put my head down and I'm going to take contact and I'm going to fall to the floor. It's probably going to hurt, but I'll take it. You know, I've seen that a couple times out of Louis. And you appreciate that kind of toughness when, you know, I think this is a team that can use that sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm fascinated to see what, if they play him, they get him on the floor, what does David Green do in terms of, you know, the team and where it's going?
Courtright, in that case, that's why you recruit New York guys. That's why coaches have fought to get in that market forever and why they want New York guys on their team. That's why I would recruit baseball players out of Plymouth and not out of Duxbury, Coy.
Thank you very much. That's very smart of you. Yeah, that's a very nice compliment. Thank you for that.
If I was running my program, that's what I would be doing.
Yeah. I'm not going to take that any further.
I so wish that you would.
Nope.
That was a BP fastball down the middle. You're a better man than me for passing that one up. Good job.
Yep.
Good
job.
Mm-hmm. Couple of results today from our women's teams. The rest will be back in action at some point after Christmas. The URI women obviously play against Lemoyne on Thursday. The Brown women don't play again until near the new year. You know, and then the URI women don't play again until Harvard, which is after Christmas. We'll get into that a little bit more later on. But Bryant playing an up game at BC. They lost in that one today. Providence playing an up game at the West
West Palm Beach Classic.
Thank you. Wanted to make sure I got that right. The West Palm Beach Classic. They'd won three in a row. They played number 10 Baylor and lost that one. You know, two teams that hadn't been in action for a little while. You know, Bryant was in the midst of sort of coming out of a losing streak that they were in. Providence still shorthanded. They'd won three in a row. Baylor is a different level from the teams that they played to this point, obviously. But quite, I think I'd paper over those two games by saying Olivia Olson played well yet again for the Friars. She's looking like a star at this point. You know, someone who we've liked on this pod for a long time, you know, who we saw potential in, certainly. You know, and she's been a real bright spot for them. And then Bryant playing at BC, you got scoring from Mariona Planas-Fortuny, Mia Mancini, Nia Scott. Those are the three players who you think, when you're going into the America East, that they're going to be the ones who are dragging you forward, certainly Planas-Fortuny and Mancini. So, you know, losses for those teams, you know, but certainly more typical performances, more expected performances from the principal actors in those games, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at Bryant, I think Mia, you know, she's going to get more and more attention as the season is going on. And so as she puts together these good performances, you know, that tells me she sort of realized, okay, well, I'm going to be near the top of the scout. So, you know, I need to know that going in, you know, and I think she's been able to handle that, which is really nice. She's adjusted to it a little bit. With PC, yeah, I think Olivia, you know, fourth double-double of the season, even in the loss to Baylor. You know, but she's really, I think she's really stepped forward as a leader for the team, you know, particularly with the injuries that they've had. Shout out here to Laren Edwards, who
what a had story, to, right?
Really had good. To suit up and was a grad assistant and now is on the team. And I went to the Sacred Heart game Saturday, Bill. She played really well. Like, it's like fit right in. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm looking at it. I'm like, is this the girl that just got added to the roster and suited up? I'm like, wow. Didn't seem like it. Just seemed like somebody that was added to the team that was just kind of stepping up because, you know, Grace and Kylie aren't playing. Yeah, really impressive. That's a great story. And I think it speaks to the buy-in that the team has with Coach Bath. You know, they really, there's a positivity about her. You know, it's great to see. Great to see the buy-in. You know, there's some excitement there. Yeah, I mean, we saw that obviously with the victory over URI, but continuing to see it, just good vibes out of that program. You know, and I'd say the same for Bryant, even in a loss, you know what you got. And as we get close to conference play, that's a really good thing.
Yeah, Aaron Bath, as we suspected on the last pod, Sacred Heart was a Christmas sweater game.
Yes, it was. Providence.
Aaron Bath brought the heat with the Christmas.
She brought the heat with the sweater. She still had the reindeer face and nose on her walking boot. Yeah, it was tremendous. Tremendous.
You get the sense that woman doesn't do anything halfway.
no way.
If you say, Aaron, this is going to be a Christmas game, she's like, can I show up in a sleigh? You know?
Oh, like, you certainly slay showing up in a sleigh.
Well, that's right.
How you doing? Right.
Very good. Very good. Where are my reindeer? Bring them in. Let's go. If we're going to do this, we're going to be authentic. We're going all the way with it.
Right.
It'll be tremendous in that way. You know, and Bryant, you mentioned Bryant. Like, you're playing a bye game at Boston College. They're in the ACC. You're not supposed to win. You know, like the numbers say what they say, you know.
Yep.
What you want is to go out there and have your good players play well and, you know, have some correctable points for your other players in your rotation. And Lynn Ann Kukoski is definitely going to get that out of that game. You know, and they're going to carry that forward. You know, they're less than 2 weeks away from starting America East play. And so that's that sort of experience, even though it is painful in real time, it's invaluable for them. You know, they're going to carry that as they get ready for Albany, I think it is, they open up with. I want to say they're on the road against Albany. January 4th sticks out in my head, somewhere in there. January 3rd. I think
you're probably right. Yeah.
Somewhere in there. We will have plenty of time to break that down in future editions of the pod. Coit, I wonder, as we come to the end here, just thoughts on Christmas. Are we ready? Are we feeling good? Are we, Coit's got his finger up. What's going on?
I got one more college basketball point before we get into Christmas.
Okay, one more. Good.
I want to praise you.
Me?
And I want to just bring it up again on the pod because you wrote it well and it was fun. I want to praise you for that piece that you wrote about the hypothetical Rhode Island college basketball team. Folks didn't get to read it in the Projo this week, Billy looked at the talent from the state of Rhode Island that is around college basketball right now and said, if we built a team here with all Rhode Island, what would it look like? Players, starting five, bench, coaching staff. It's a great read, so go and read it. And I think the thing that I take out of it, because you can, debate all you want about starting fives and whatever and who's in it, who's out. I think the thing that really impressed me about it was just the fact that these kids all came from Rhode Island. They are making an impact where they are in their college basketball careers and programs. And it's not slowing down either. There's more talent out of this state coming along. There's going to be another wave. And I think the waves are going to get bigger. And I think it speaks to the hoops culture here, the importance of the game here. I think at the youth and the high school levels. And I also would say that when you have four healthy Division I men's basketball programs that are, getting eyes on them every night that they play, kids coming out, teenagers coming out to watch these games, they have something to strive for, to get to. And I think you're seeing more and more of these kids say, well, I want to go play it. I want to go be Tyler Kolick at Marquette. I could be Keegan Records at Colgate. I can be all these guys. Isaiah Miranda's just getting into his college basketball career.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens fast. So I love the piece, and I love how much more and more we're seeing college basketball talent coming out of the state and making an impact on the game. It's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for the kind words. I didn't bring it up because I didn't I don't glorify my own stuff. I don't really like doing that.
But it was fun. It was a fun piece.
You also, you inevitably on something like that, you get a deluge of hate mail and DMs saying, why did you do this? Why did you pick these starters? Some of those showed up from players themselves who were on the bench DMing me saying, what are you talking about? I'm better than that guy. Which was a little surprising and honestly disappointing. It's like, hey, man, like, don't do that.
It's supposed to be fun.
Don't do that.
Well, it's supposed to be fun. And so I had fun reading it. I know others had fun reading it because that's what it's supposed to be. It's hypothetical. It's fun. It's fantasy. Debate. That's the thing. Debate's supposed to be spirited, not. It's not personal. It's debate. It's fun. It's cool. And like I said, it's really cool that Rhode Island has such a great basketball culture that more and more talents come out of the state. And, I went, Eric went, your partner, Eric Rube at the Providence Journal, went and saw this young man, Kyle Dells at Juanita Sanchez, wrote a great piece on him.
Yeah.
And it's funny that he did that, because I had heard from another place, hey, you got to go see this kid, this freshman at Juanita. He's pretty good. And I went to go see him actually tonight, tease ahead to ABC 6 News at 11 tonight, and it'll be online at some point. Kid's really good.
Yeah, right.
he made a play that I'm like, ooh, I can put that on the 11 o'clock news. Right. And I'm like, all right. But you're seeing more and more of these kids. They just keep coming. And that's really fun. So, yeah, I'm sorry if that if anybody took it the wrong way, because they shouldn't. It's It's fun, Bill. Yeah. It's supposed to be fun.
No, believe me, I don't take it personally. I just think, if you don't agree with me, you're an idiot. I don't mean that. The impetus for it obviously was Tyler Kulak coming back with Marquette, him being the Big East Player of the Year, him being on some preseason All American teams, and you wonder what if he had been recruited at a different level? What if he had been identified at a different level? What if Providence's circumstances weren't what they were when he went into the portal from George Mason? If they didn't have Jared Bynum, if they didn't have Al Durham coming in, if they weren't recruiting Noah Locke, if they weren't recruiting Jaden Pierre, would they have felt like, hey, we have an obvious need at point guard. This kid can play. He can help us.
Right.
You wonder if you or I had been in a different place, if they had been even in a position to reach out to him after you transferred from George Mason. And then you start to look down the list and you think, man, not only do we have a great player on this team, a great current college player, but we've got a reasonable starting five among the group, like guys who can play the positions on top of it. Enoch Cheeks at Dayton, shooting guard. Tedrick Wilcox at Hampton, playing the wing. Isaiah Miranda, who you mentioned, someone who hasn't done a ton on the court but was a four-star top 50 type recruit, who could play a stretch four. Keegan Records, who's had a great college career at Colgate, playing the five. And then the firepower off the bench. You look at guys like DeAndre Dominguez, who's at Arkansas State. He was at UMass before that. TJ Weeks, who's a veteran college basketball, 15 player at Rider, who was at UMass before that. Sebastian Thomas, who had significant experience at URI, who's off to a really good start at Albany. Aaron Gray, who's at Indiana State, with his cousin Anton Gray, who would be an assistant coach on this team. And Indiana State's 11-1 to start off.
Hey, Bill. Yeah. Who would the head coach of the team be?
The head coach would be Ed Cooley, obviously. Ed Cooley is as acrimonious as his departure was from Providence. Ed is Providence born and bred, went to Central, came back to coach his hometown Friars, made 7 NCAA tournaments, was the Naismith National Coach of the Year with the Friars. You would expect him to make the NCAA tournament with this collection of talent. You put Anton Gray and TJ Sorrentine on his staff, and we like to have a laugh and a joke with TJ, because he's that type of guy, and we've certainly done that on this pod. But look at the guards at Brown that TJ has recruited and developed. Whether it's Sean McGonigal or Brandon Anderson, Keno Lilly Jr. is just the latest. Those would be two very capable lieutenants for Ed Cooley. This team, call it coming back sort of sparked an idea in my mind in the offseason. Hey, what would the Rhode Island mythical starting five or 13-man squad, 13 full scholarships look like? And that leaves off some other guys like Jack Graham, who's just getting started at Richmond.
Just about to bring up Jack, yeah.
I got a couple emails touting some D3 guys like Arius Raspberry, who's had a really good career at Johnson & Wales. And who is going to be one of the all-time leading scorers there by the time he's done. And the fact that Arius or Jack Graham, Jack playing at Richmond, the team that traditionally has been in the top half of the A-10, the fact that neither one of those guys can get into this team speaks to the health of that landscape at the moment. You mentioned the next wave. You got Asmar Abdullah, who's committed to BU, and Eze Wally, who's committed to High Point. Kelvin Odie is a high major recruit. Josh Ogiri, Trey Resendi, Xavier Hazard. These guys are all going to be on Division I radars coming up in the next year or two or three. And I think a lot of that, Coit, you mentioned the reasons for it. I think the internet is a big part of that as well. I think guys are more exposed now than they've ever been. I think Rhode Island is a place that normally you would have just recruited for one or two guys and you wouldn't have wanted to waste your time. You could have gone to New York City and seen 20 guys instead of just two in a game. You could have gone to a certain grassroots tournament and seen guys who weren't from here. They weren't good enough, quote unquote, to be on those teams. Regionally in New England or beyond into New York and Pennsylvania. And I think the word's out now. And I think with the grassroots scene here. I think with the knapsack here, with that league being so powerful at this point in the prep level, I think Rhode Island guys have a bigger stage than they've ever had before to showcase their ability. And I think you've got quite a few guys on that mythical team and quite a few guys coming up who have made great use of it. And I credit them fully. I applaud them for their ambition, for their hard work. And I celebrate their achievements, and I look forward to many, many more to come.
Love it. Well said. Can't say any better than that. That's what it's about. It's pretty cool.
And with that, Coity, we will wrap up the pre-Christmas edition of the pod.
What were you going to ask me about the holidays?
Well, I was going to ask you if you have any one thing that you're asking for from Santa this year, or if there's any particular gift, you don't have to say what or to who, that you are excited to give.
Yes, there's a couple gifts that I'm excited to give. One of them is actually to my partner here at Channel 6, Ian Steele. I got him something really funny that I feel like he's going to open and instantly laugh. And
okay, good.
That's always a great gift. There's a couple others that I got for some good friends and family that I'm looking forward to giving to. From me, for Santa Claus on my list, I'll say give us a fun NCAA tournament spot to go to. How about that?
As in not Greensboro?
No offense to Greensboro, but give us like Nashville or something. I don't know what. I don't even know. I haven't even looked at the sites, but
man, Greensboro was a tough one. Greensboro was not. You and I had fun in Sacramento. I remember Sacramento. I didn't have big high hopes for it in 2018. It actually turned out to be pretty good. 2017. Turned out to be pretty good. Pittsburgh in 2018. We had been to Pittsburgh back and forth a couple times. Pittsburgh, very underrated in terms of, a destination city, a place where you can go out, a place that hosts sporting events very well. I was very pleasantly surprised the time we spent in Pittsburgh with URI. Greensboro just wasn't it. It wasn't quite it. It didn't really do it for us last year with the
my good friend, our good friend from the National Sports Media Association, Dave Gorin, did his best to be a great host. So I applaud him for that, and I appreciate that.
Not a reflection on the staff there or on the venue. Dave was great. Greensboro Coliseum was perfectly fine. It was a decent space to work in. It had nothing to do with them. It was more the hotel situation, the fact that we were out of downtown, the fact that parts of downtown closed up a little early for people who were at the gym all day and weren't necessarily getting out at a normal time. You want something that's open all night. We got spoiled, I think, because we go to the Big East tournament the week before and then we go to the NCAA tournament. You're in New York.
Yeah.
New York gives you everything under the sun, literally anything that you could want anywhere. It's within a fingertip's distance. Then you go to some of these places that aren't quite as lively. And you think, ooh, it's a harsh contrast, I think, a lot of the time.
Tough.
Yeah,
it's tough. Yes. What about you?
For me, I'm not really at the point where getting gifts is a thing for me. I constantly tell my parents and my brother, like, just don't get me anything. I'm okay. What I want is to spend a couple days with them. To watch my nephews open their presents is a joy unlike any other I've ever felt in my life. Because they are so cute and so innocent and so sweet. And it's also new to them. Your parents talk about it all the time. You see it through your kids' eyes at some point. I get to cheat a little bit and say that I can see it through theirs. I'll never be my brother. I'm not their father, but I feel that. As an uncle, and certainly I have my health, which is something that I didn't necessarily have a couple months ago. Went through a bit of a rough stretch and you know, had a minor correction and was right back on track in a couple of days. But, you know, whenever you struggle with your health, even in a minor way, you know, not in a major way that some people might face, you tend not to take it for granted going forward. You tend to realize that is so important to have. You know, and so I'm grateful for my health, for my family's health, certainly my parents' health, you know, now that they're retired and enjoying that the way they are. You know, so I would say that Santa has already been very generous for me and for my family. You know, certainly my friendships that I have with you and with other folks in the media here, you know, with my fraternity brothers who are spread throughout the country, who I see, you know, every once in a while when we're traveling or if they're in town here, you know, the chance to feel good when you're around certain people. You know, those guys are certainly, you know, every Friday night, high school football Friday night out with you guys. You know, after you get off the air, you can't necessarily quantify what that means on a given basis. You know, so for me, I guess I'll just appreciate the simple things going into Christmas, and long may they continue for me and for everybody else around.
Really well said, pal. Really well said. Now let's get the Koi Condo party going.
Oh, baby. Watch out, everyone. Uber drivers, get yourselves to North Smithfield. You will be needed on Saturday night. We will want you there. The drinks and the great food will be flowing. The holiday cheer will be in abundance. It'll be a great night. As we said, to start off this pod, for everyone who's celebrating, whatever holiday you may, with whatever family you find, friends you find, we wish you the best, happiness, and good health, and we will check in with you after Christmas. Coity, as always, thank you very much.
Merry Christmas, pal.